This interview was recorded for the International Bomber Command Centre Digital Archive, which owns the copyright for this performance.
Hello, I'm Fred Bark, and I was born at Risen, 2 miles north of Lincoln. At the beginning of the Second World War, I was approximately 5 years old. And I was about 2 miles from Scampton RAF camp. So I noted we used to watch the aircraft, and later in the war they became Lancasters. And as they took off, they were so low you could wave to the crew and they would wave back. Also, the Soberon Barracks, the headquarters of the Lincolnshire Regiment, was about 2 miles away, and they used to come into the parkland around my bungalow. And as a young boy, they more or less adopted me, and I used to go with them when they was doing their exercises. They showed me how to use a Bren gun and mortar guns. We did map reading, which I was useful because I knew the land and took them around. And so as I gradually grew up, and towards the end of the war, I had one sister, Beryl, who engaged and later got married to an airman. He was at Hemswell then as a ground crew engineer. He trained to be a flight engineer, and that's when he moved to Binbrook. And in Binbrook he did 33 ops. Unfortunately, he came back, and in latter years, he was about a year before he was demobbed, and then he went to Finnandley, where he was in a crew that tested aircraft that had crashed or been repaired by Avros, and they accepted them back into the RAF. So he had 1 year of more or less test flying. And when he left, he went into the fire service at Birmingham, and later as an officer or fire officer for a group of hospitals in London. So all my sort of early life was connected with the military. We also had a searchlight battery in the field, about a quarter of a mile away. The other thing about RAF Scampton, it was a lovely park where I lived, and there was a lake. And for recreation, the flight crews, when there wasn't flying in the evening, used to come fishing in the lake, I think for relaxation. And in the evening they'd go up to the hall and have late night drinks and go back. So all my life in the early years was connected with the military, either the army and the RAF chiefly. But now I've got a son in the Navy.
I'll just ask you a couple of questions, Fred. When you were at Scampton and you saw the Lancasters flying out and flying in, when they were flying in, did you see any that were damaged?
Yes, I did. We had two actually crash within half a mile of our bungalow, and it wasn't a nice sight. The thing I can remember, the edge at one end of the field, and all the debris flew backwards and covered an area at least as large as a football pitch. And so there was one to the north of me and one to the south. And the other thing that used to happen was we used to try to count them going out in the evening. And I don't know if it was short wave or long wave, but on the radio, you could pick their talk as they came into land. Some would say they wanted emergency landing, they'd got people injured on board. And so we had a good idea at what the losses was for that evening. And but the things that you did, you just took things that were serious now more an everyday life. And when we was fishing and I was talking to some of the crew, I would say, "Where's Bill such and such?" And the reply was, "He's gone for a Burton." And then you didn't say any more then.
As a child, when you saw the Lancasters flying out and then coming in, did you find that sort of exciting?
No, I think we took it for granted. It was 4 or 5 years of the same thing. Obviously, weather made a big difference. They were scheduled to fly, and then over the target it would be cloudy. So that evening, they had to do something that they hadn't got planned. And my brother-in-law, who flew from Binbrook, you would bring them and they would have supper, and then they would hitchhike back to base. So I think the whole country was at war, and you just accepted these things happened.
Your brother-in-law, when he was flying out of Binbrook, do you know what sort of missions he was flying?
No, they didn't talk too much about it, but he was in the latter part of the war, I think 43, 44-ish, which was the 33 hops, and he would say, "Oh, it was a long one or a short one," but I think they just tried to live a normal life. I think the biggest worry we had, my sister, who was obviously married at the time, lived at Grimsby, but the worry of the people left behind, why the crews, and you know, perhaps every 8 trips one wouldn't come back. I think the people, the crews was always cheerful, and I don't know, it would be to help them, but I think the worrying people was us watching.
So do you think it had a big impact on your family, like your parents and...
Well, I had no brothers, just the one sister. He had a big impact on me because he was such a lovely person. He was well respected by everyone. When he was a young man, he came from Birmingham and he run the local football leagues. He went into the Birmingham Fire Service. And after a number of years there was a vacancy for the hospital as a fire officer. After a severe accident, they found out the hospital people and nobody qualified. So it was ideal to go in hospital in an environment sort of thing. But one thing, and he was very good at sort of taking things down, literature, and his logbook, understood, was sent down to St. Athens as an example of an aircrew from taking off over the bombing area and back. I can remember looking at this book when it was handed to him at the end of the war. You couldn't see any tremor or anything. It just was normal, and he was a person, but he was an extremely likeable person. One other thing I can remember now, one of these evenings when there wasn't flying, he brought a friend back, and he was a member, he was called West, and there was a very big garage and sales people in Lincoln. And he was piggybacking me on a lovely summer's evening in the park, and attempting to throw me into some nettles and that. I can see it now. And I asked him the next day, how was Mr. West, and he had gone for a burn. These are the things I really remember.
Was your sister married to your brother-in-law at the time, or were they just boyfriend and girlfriend?
No, he was, I think, met at a dance at Lincoln, I imagine, when he was at Hemsall. And after two years, they got married when he became aircrew, which a lot did. So all his ops from Binbrook, he was married to his sister, and she went to lodge in Grimsby, since she was nearby.
Did that affect your sister a lot, with her knowing that he was flying these ops?
I think it did. But you learned in the war years not to show too much, because it was... Every family had that. My neighbour had a son which was a little bit older than me, and he went in for aircrew, and he didn't make the 8 trips. So it was all around you. It's a thing you didn't talk about, but as you get older, you do think about it.
So you feel more able to talk about things now where you didn't at the time?
Yes, I think because I was young at the time, it was exciting for me to have all these people around me. And I think being a young boy, and the soldiers and airmen had families of their own, it was a bit of comfort to them, but me at the time, it was just a way of life. And my family's been, my mother had 5 brothers in the First World War in France, and one in the Second World. My father had a brother, both of them was in the First World War, so it was just natural, really, that we just wanted to win.
Can you think of anything that happened during the Second World War that you found amusing?
Not really. The thing I think I noticed more, everybody stuck together, as you would say in Lincolnshire. Everybody helped each other. I don't think anybody was really miserable. Because you thought if it was miserable, well, the enemy was winning. And it was this comradeship. And I think that went right through the whole country. London had their bombing, we had something else, but it was, I think we could do with a little bit of that spirit now.
Okay, Fred, that was great. Thank you very much. Thank you. There's some nice little snippets in there.
Yeah.
Oh, the door's squeaking away.
When you finish, you can think of
No, we're not finished. I mean, the camera's still on. If you can think of something else, that's fine. But no, you did really well. There's some interesting things in there that you wouldn't normally hear, you know, so that was good, you know. So.
Does make me feel old.
Sorry?
Makes me feel old.
Oh, well, you sort of lived through it. That's how you get to be old. Did. You live through things, you
know.
Well,
I did 2 years of national service
in
Rafa Marham, my son has made a career in the Navy, and 30 years in it, 31 now. And that's gone quick as lightning, really. I remember just joining up, sort of thing. And so I think, like my mother coming out of 13 children, my wife's family, 15 children. Everybody turns out well and good civilians. It does make me wonder what the country's coming to now when you've got their handouts if you've got 2 or 3 children. People are a lot more better organised than they are now. I find technology, I think, can be helpful, but I've always looked in it. That is a tool to use the best parts of it. Don't let it. I mean, what annoys me is the people who walk out of a store and the first thing is to look at the phone. Now they're up, you sit in a bush and you're tip-tapping about, and I think, well, ain't there something better to do than that sort of thing? So, when I was young, I used to think, well, older people are talking a bit silly, but now I am older, you can look back on a lot wider spectrum, and you can see if everything's moved on in, say, 10-year things, and you have to alter with it. But technology, I think we think it will look after us, but it will ruin us if we don't.
Oh, that's fine. That's lovely, Fred. Thanks very much.
Right,
yeah, what I do is I'll switch the camera off now. Yeah.